Today is Thursday, 4th November 2020. So, oh, sorry, 2021. So we will be continuing from our sharing from this book, The Essence of Implant Meaning, Teachings from the Adapted Verse of the Sutra of Implant Meaning. We are at page 463, yeah? The first beginning paragraph. Okay, just relax body and mind and maintain some form of awareness within. We will, as usual, have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We will off the light so that you can have your half an hour awareness-based meditation. Always remember the four support. Relax, maintain awareness. Maintain awareness for as long as you can. Then finally, trust. Trust that nature to do the meditation. So I will set the alarm now so that you can continue your awareness-based meditative training. The main purpose of this meditation is to train your mind to be aware and stabilize this awareness within. The moment you are without thought, you are already aware. So you don't have to try to be aware. Just relax, maintain awareness, silence everything. Don't think, don't try to know, don't do anything. Just relax, maintain awareness. Then let that awareness stabilize. Means maintain awareness for as long as you can. And finally, when you have stabilized that, and this mind will be under your perfect command. Is you want it to relax, maintain awareness, it will do that. And it will understand many things. Well, this is the meditative mind. If you want it to arise, to create a thought, or to perceive something, or to know something, you can also use it. Then you can see clearly. Before the arising of thought or activity of mind, or what we call the aggregates of mind, true mind is completely silent without thought, without aggregate. Means there is just an awareness nature within. There is no perception, no feeling, no thinking, no mental activity or mental state. It is just the awareness nature within. So this is the mind that can meditate insight into phenomena and awaken. So okay, I'll let you continue with your meditation. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to develop the meditative training in the midst of life. We call it daily mindfulness, fully aware, fully mindful, heedful throughout the day. By transmitting the essence of the Dhamma, those who hear the Dhamma can believe and accept it. Hearing the Dhamma without developing wisdom is like counting other people's treasure. Hearing the Dhamma without awakening is like holding a torch and going against the wind. Being clever and having mundane knowledge is like holding the knife but cutting ourselves. Oh, this is a good analogy, huh? So when you think you are clever and when you have a lot of mundane knowledge which is not wisdom, you are like holding a knife but keep on cutting yourself. When we hear the Dhamma and develop wisdom, we can benefit others and ourselves. We often speak of the Dhamma as water. But if we want to be even more diligent in our practice, We need to take in the Dhamma as marrow. So going a step further is not only to touch the surface or the water part, but to reach the marrow, bone marrow. We must treat the Dhamma like an essential nutrient that is absorbed by our bones or bone marrow to create the new blood that circulates throughout the whole body. Therefore, from the moment we first engage in spiritual practice, we must unceasingly learn the Buddha Dhamma and thoroughly analyze the karmic law of cause and effect to give rise to new realization. So this one is very important as far as cultivation is concerned. From the very moment we first engage in the spiritual practice, we must, without any lax mind, straight away, unceasingly, learn the Buddha Dhamma and thoroughly understand the karmic law of cause and effect to give rise to new realization. For instance, we must understand how two persons will interact after causes and conditions bring them together. Why is it that we create good affinity with people we will mutually trust and be drawn to each other? And why is it that when we create bad affinity with people, although we are joyfully drawn together at the first, over time we will grow to hate each other? Through the Dhamma, we can clearly understand how our ignorance led us to repeatedly create karmic negativity, resulting in negative karmic condition. Therefore, the Buddha carefully and thoroughly, therefore, the Buddha carefully and thoughtfully transmitted the essence of the Dhamma, the essence of Dhamma, to guide sentient beings into the correct and broad path. He adopted the teaching to everyone's capacities, hoping that everyone could experience for themselves the beautiful state of this direct path. To receive the essence of the Dhamma, we must be able to hear the Dhamma and believe and accept it. Furthermore, we must put it into practice. Regardless of what we see or experience in life, we must connect it to the Dhamma and use our experiences to verify the Dhamma's true principles. The deeper our realization, the more wisdom we can develop. This is very true. For cultivators of the way, you will be able to fathom all this. Hearing the Dhamma without developing wisdom is like counting other people's treasure. This one is easy to understand. After hearing the Dhamma, if we do not mindfully take it in to heart, then it is as if we are just counting other people's treasure. We'll be like bank employee transferring assets, valuables pass through our hand, but we do not own them. Hearing the Dhamma without awakening is like holding a torch and going against the wind. After hearing the Dhamma, some people have not yet awakened, but they cleverly use the Dhamma as a means of tricking people. This is like holding a torch and walking against the wind. We can easily burn ourselves. As we learn the Dhamma way or the Buddha's way, we must cultivate. As we learn the Buddha's way, we must cultivate it inwardly in our mind and practice it outwardly in our action. So this one is very important understanding. You have to go to mind. The inward cultivation at the mind level is very important. Then after that, you put it into practice in our daily life. We must not use the Buddha Dharma to aggrandize ourselves without ever actually putting it into practice. If we do not cultivate ourselves and perfect our character, how can we possibly attain Buddhahood? Being clever and having mundane knowledge is like holding the knife but cutting ourselves. If we only use our mundane knowledge to play with the Buddha Dharma, it's like using a knife to cut our own flesh. We only end up hurting ourselves. Practice the Buddha's way requires us to transform mundane knowledge into pure wisdom. So this part is also quite true. Eh? When you cultivate the Buddha's way, you need to transform whatever you know, your mundane knowledge, into pure true wisdom so that it can be put to great use. We must not use mundane knowledge to hurt ourselves and others. If we can nourish our wisdom life with the Dhamma and help others to do the same, we have truly penetrated the Dhamma. We must not walk into this treasure trove yet live empty-handed, all because we are unwilling to reach out to grasp the true treasure. Practicing the Buddha's way require that we hear the Dhamma and develop wisdom. We must not only hear the Dhamma but use it to unlock our wisdom and make use of that wisdom to help people so that we can benefit ourselves and others. So this part is concerning cultivation. It's very important that when we cultivate, we have to do it correctly. Otherwise, we will be like deluded being stuck with mundane knowledge, not Dhamma wisdom. So mundane knowledge can actually give rise to problem. That's why there is a saying in the sutta, there are many things that can bind living beings. One of them is knowledge, knowledge bind. All knowing is knowledge, that there is nothing to know. What you need is wisdom, understanding. So whatever you know, when you commit to memory, is a knowledge. So knowledge actually binds. That's why they have this famous saying in Mahayana, Suo Zi Zhang. Everything you know obstructs you. Then all your worry become an obstruction too. Fan Nao Zhang, Suo Zi Zhang. So all these are very useful. That's why when we cultivate the Buddha Dhamma, we have to really develop the understanding, then put it into practice, then use it to unlock our wisdom, then make use of it to help people and help ourselves. Okay, we go to the next adapted verse. We can focus our mind to concentrate and finish all things that need to be done. With pure wisdom, we can comprehend the great path. We can attain the insights of bodhisattvas and perfect great wisdom. We can end all negative tendency and eliminate all delusion and karma by preserving Sorry. By persevering. It should be persevering. By persevering. Persevering. We can advance in cultivating the virtue of wisdom. So this is what I meant by you need three things to be successful in cultivation. First, you have to be sincere. Then you must have faith. Then you must have perseverance. That's why perseverance is very important. When you have that, you can advance in cultivating the Dhamma. As we learn the Buddha's way, we seek to attain wisdom. That's why that is the only thing we really look forward to. We cultivate the Buddha's way or the meditative training, not to achieve fame, not to achieve psychic ability, not to do funny things like things that are very unique and very special, like reading people's mind and all this thing, or develop ability to levitate, or to see things that people cannot see. All these are the deviation, the purpose and intent of the Buddha's way and the meditative training is to develop wisdom to free our mind, to liberate our mind so that we can understand life clearly, so that we can live life beautifully. Then we can make use of this understanding to help others to develop the understanding of life and thereby transforming themselves for the better, character-wise, personality-wise, so that they know how to take care of their karma, develop the virtuous way to have the good life, the beautiful life, the meaningful life. So these are very important understanding. So I read again, as we learn the Buddha's way, we seek to attain wisdom. However, in our daily living as ordinary beings or sentient beings, we are constantly letting what we learn leak out. This is because our mind are filled with leaks. Low, in Mandarin is called low. So all this, when we understand, when we are mindful, we can see them. All these leaks are our afflictions. Since our mind are filled with affliction, the truth can never enter or remain in our mind. So we cannot unlock our wisdom. As we learn the Buddha's way, we need to achieve a flawless state, which means having a mind without lick. Then when the Buddha Dharma enters our mind, we will not lick away, and we will be able to unlock our wisdom and eliminate all the afflictions that cause people to be so deluded. If we want to truly attain the state of flawless wisdom and eliminate all affliction, we must first tame our often undisciplined or unrestrained mundane mind. In other words, the heedless mundane thinking mind. We must focus our mind to concentrate and finish all things that need to be done. Here the word concentrate is not so correct. A better word should be we must train our mind. Even the word focus also same. We must train our mind to be aware, to be mindful, so that it can be collected and unwavering to do all things, to accomplish all things that need to be accomplished. Since we are learning the Buddha's way and walking the Bodhisattva path, We must constantly reflect on ourselves. Are we benefiting and caring for sentient beings? This is a very important check. You can check yourself often. It is, are you benefiting and caring for living beings? This is to do away with selfishness. If we see afflicted sentient beings, despite being afflicted ourselves, we should still find ways to help them resolve their affliction. Someone once asked me, "Master, sometimes when I see people trapped by their affliction, I'm reminded to be vigilant and reflect on myself. Then I think clearly this is something that they could just let go of. Why can't they just let it go? Even though I want to advise them, I just can't bring myself to take that step." Then the teacher replied, he said, "No matter what states you are in, when you see others troubled by affliction, you need to be courageous and guide them." This man who asked the question eventually found the courage to give guidance to others, and he became inspired in the process. So this one, maybe I should add in something which is very important. You cannot just because you want to help and you go all out to help. Actually, the Dhamma way, the wisdom way is not like that. You must have the ability to sense or understand whether there is condition to help or not, and whether people want your help or not. If there is no condition to help, and if people are not interested in all this spiritual thing, then it is best we just let things be. We may understand, but not everybody can understand. So if you are not careful, it can cause more problems. It can even backfire and create more unnecessary karmic problems. So this part, we have to bear in mind. This is what I want to add on. Now, according to the author, he said, that person told her later, he said, "Thank you, Master. You encourage me to guide others. But when I do so, I find that I'm actually guiding myself at the same time. Before, when I listen to teaching, I always forget them as soon as I heard them. But in order to guide others, I now push myself to consider how to take the Dhamma that I have been hearing or I have seen and hear and heard to help others apply it. As I do this, my mind has also become cleverer." This one is the way he put it. But the actual training is slightly different. It's not this way. This way is maybe initially. Initially, you try to commit to memory. But a better way is to contemplate, reflect, and stabilize the understanding. Not to like commit to memory or try to remember so that next time you can guide people or teach people. If you do that, it will not benefit you. Because the understanding is Dhamma cultivation is different. When you cultivate the Dhamma, when you have stabilized your understanding or awakened to it, that understanding will stay with your nature. You don't have to remember anything. Because the danger of memory is it becomes knowledge. It becomes a thought process. So knowledge is not wisdom. Wisdom is an understanding, an awakening. It's not rigid. It's not a knowledge. So this part, maybe make a note. That's why the last sentence, that person that replied to the master, he said, as I do this, my mind has become clearer. Clearer is correct. Cleverer is wrong. Clearer is correct. So to him, there is more clarity because as he applied the knowledge, if he can really create condition to help people, then he develop own learning and understanding. Then as you do this, over time, you will develop more ability or more clarity to do such things. Initially, when you start to come out and try to do your bodhisattva work, to take sentient being across, you will come across many things. Then you will learn from them. As you learn, you will finally end up with the understanding that I shared with you without condition. Don't try to do anything unless there are affinity, causes and conditions behind, and people wants to be helped, then only things can happen. Otherwise, refrain and avoid. Okay, I will read on. Therefore, we must not allow the Dhamma we attain in our daily living to easily leak away. Otherwise, it will not be there when we need them. We must constantly focus our mind so that after we accept the Buddha Dharma, we can apply it in our life and learn to let go of all afflictions. So this initial cultivation is very important. Self-cultivation. Whenever we see others giving rise to discursive thinking or heedless thinking and go astray, we can immediately share helpful ways to apply the Dhamma. This is mutually beneficial. Since we are transforming ourselves and others at the same time, by transforming others, we ourselves benefit and become filled with Dhamma joy. Since we have aspired to learn the Buddha's way with pure wisdom, we can comprehend the great path. We are seeking the Dhamma, pure and simple, not for fame or personal gain. We must adopt the Buddha's mind as our mind and return to our pure and undefiled intrinsic nature so we can attain the insight of bodhisattvas and develop great wisdom. The insight of bodhisattva is the ability to learn or Dhamma, and then take it into our mind without letting any of it leak away. So we go to the footnote 60 on what is the description of insight of bodhisattvas. So footnote 60, the insight of bodhisattva, also known as bodhisattva wisdom or the wisdom of all paths, is one of the three kinds of wisdom. It is the wisdom that completely recognizes the differences in all worldly and world-transcending paths. This is wisdom that only bodhisattvas have. It is also called the wisdom of all seeds of the path. According to the treatise of the Great Perfection of Wisdom, Volume 27, in the context of the six parameters, The wisdom that allows discerning contemplation is called Bodhisattva wisdom. That's why you have to discern the Dhamma and contemplate the Dhamma. It also refers to the wisdom of Bodhisattva who learn all teachings of the path to save sentient beings. The Tiantai school connects it with the review of illusoriness among the three views. The view of illusoriness, the view of emptiness, and the middle view, and state that it is the wisdom for eliminating dust like delusion. So this is a footnote explanation. So I will close this. Okay. So I have finished off with the insight of the Bodhisattva. Then I continue. To attain the insight of Bodhisattvas and develop great wisdom, we must learn to end all negative tendency and eliminate all delusion and karma. We must say that engaging in spiritual practice is learning to eliminate habitual tendency. In fact, this is the most difficult to root out habitual tendency. When you root out habitual tendency, you can root out all negative tendency. Then you can eliminate your delusion and do away with your negative karma. We often say that engaging in spiritual practice is learning to eliminate habitual tendency. Yeah, this is very true. Ordinary people have severe habitual tendency. So whether they are habits or speech or action, all such habitual tendency must be rooted out or eliminated one by one. So this habitual tendency is something we need to understand. What is habitual tendency? From the word, it comes from the word habits. Habit means things we do repeatedly, constantly. Then you combine the word tendency, means it has become not only a habit, it's like a tendency for you to behave that way. And these are deluded negative habitual tendencies, which leads to karmic negativity and downfall. So what happened is, according to Lord Buddha, when we live life, we have to be observant, we have to be mindful. Then initially, before we have the Dhamma, we will come to realize that we have a lot of this negative tendency born of mental hindrance. The Buddha called them mental hindrances, mind state that hinders you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness, or from developing the meditative mind. That's why it's called mental hindrance, means it hinders your mind. And what are they? The Buddha named five. He said, these are your sensual desire and ill will, means your positive and negative craving in life. Your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your reaction to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So all these are very strong mental hindrance, because when you do this, especially things that you like, then there is this craving for the senses. Then when it is something you don't like, you want to push it away. It's something that you dislike or a negative emotion. You want it to go away, like painful feeling, unpleasant feeling, or what they call worry, fear, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, and even affliction. You want it to go away. Whereas all of the one that attract the senses, like your sensual desire for good food, yeah, comfortable condition, to satisfy your craving, your desire, your lust, all this, when you attach or cling onto it without yourself even understanding what this thing is, it becomes sensual desire and you will. The first two, negative, what they call mental hindrance. So it throughout the day, when you live your life, everything you come to experience through your seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness, you have this, what they call reaction to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. The duality, the like and dislike, the pleasant and the unpleasant sense experience. When this happens, it is conditioned by your views, opinion, and belief system and thought processes. And you do it so often until it becomes habitual throughout the day. Then the moment you are lost in thought, when your thought is preoccupied with the sensual desire, the sensual craving, or the ill will and hatred, or the mind that want to push things away, what happened to you? You are no longer mindful. You are no longer aware. That's why you develop emotion. You stir your mind. Craving can bring about lust, desire, attachment, clinging, grasping. Then the other, ill will or aversion, envy and jealousy, negative tendency, can bring about the negative tendency to dislike or to push away. So these are the duality, the positive and negative craving or mind states that constantly arise in heedless sentient beings. So when you have this so often, it becomes habits. Then it develops into tendency. That's why we call it habitual tendency. Yeah. Then you cannot be at peace at every moment of sense experience. That's why mental hindrance create a lot of what they call mental emotions, mental negativity. And all this are evil roots of greed and hatred. The positive craving or sensual desire is actually very severe greed. The evil roots of greed. Then the negative craving, aversion, dislike, anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, etc. This one is the opposite. It is also an evil roots. The evil roots of hatred. So when you have this, they are born into your life, existence. So when you are mindful, when you are aware, you can see all this very clearly. That's why mindfulness is very important. That it makes you sensitive. It lets you understand how your mind stir and react to sense experience and create a mental hindrance that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness? Why can't you be at peace with what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, and what you tactile feel and think? If you can't do that, means you have not developed your meditative training and understanding. The wisdom is not there. Then the third mental hindrance is sleepiness. The Buddha calls it sloth and torpor. Lethargic mind, the sleepy mind, the mind that is very lazy, that's slothful. So when you are in this state, you cannot have clarity, you cannot have alertness, you cannot be awake. That's why you cannot meditate. So a sleepy mind cannot be mindful, cannot be awake. That's why it's a mental hindrance. Then the fourth one is very obvious. The Buddha said, when you have a lot of what they call mental, when this mental thing, your mind becomes restless, because you have problem. So restlessness of mind due to problem, due to certain reason, is the fourth mental hindrance. So when you have problems with life, especially the first number two reality state condition, what happens is it prevents you from having a peaceful mind, a calm mind, because you become restless, too much, too fear, too worry, too anxiety. You worry about your problem. You want to resolve it, but you cannot resolve it. So this thought, restlessness, fear, worry, anxiety, they keep on attacking you, haunting you. That's why sometimes when you want to meditate, you can't. When you want to calm yourself down, enjoy a peaceful evening, enjoy a very nice evening tea or afternoon tea, or even have a nice coffee in the morning, you can't, because this thing, your problem, so-called problem in inverted comma, will haunt you, will make you restless, arise the fear, the worry, the anxiety. And this one afflicts human beings the most. Human beings suffer the most. So if you can see all this mindfully and understand all this and awaken, then retrospectively through the understanding, reverse all this, then you become beautiful. Then you are cultivating Dhamma. Then the four mental hindrance been rooted out will make you very beautiful. So this fourth mental hindrance is very powerful. So a lot of people are caught in it. So you have to inquire, develop the right understanding, and come out of it. When something happens, why must you straight away develop the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow and the lamentation, and perceive it as a problem? That is where living beings become deluded, suffer. They attach, they cling, they hold without understanding. But if you are able to objectively look at it and inquire what actually happened, then you focus on the situation. Then when you don't label it as something fearful, negative, then what happened? Then it becomes a reality. And this reality, like the Buddha has taught us, is common to all humanity. Not only you experience it, every living being that goes through life will experience it. So if I understand this, then I will reflect and contemplate. Oh yes, no amount of fear, worry, anxiety can help me solve this problem. so-called problem. But if I don't perceive it as a problem, I perceive it as a common reality of mankind or humanity, then I can do something about it. Then I can be at peace with it. Like the Buddha said, when the causes and conditions are already created, things will go that way. That's why I think it's just the way it is, the reality, the truth. Truth is, the reality is. So when we accept, our mind do not create fear, worry, anxiety, and do not panic. Then we inquire, what actually went wrong? How can I move? How can I resolve this amicably with wisdom, with understanding, following Noble Eightfold Path? And that is the Dhamma way. Then from there, you realize your mind that doesn't stir and react and create restlessness and mental hindrance is at peace. When it is at peace, there is clarity. When there is clarity, then you can act. You act with wisdom, understanding, following Noble Eightfold Path, which will lead to the end of all suffering. This is the Dhamma way. This is how you overcome and root out your mental hindrance. Then the last of the five mental hindrance is doubt. When you have doubt, means you don't have faith in yourself, in your ability to understand this teaching, this Dhamma, this truth. That's why doubt is due to your lack of faith, lack of understanding. So doubt also will create or trigger off fear, worry, anxiety, leading to lack of confidence in doing things. So when you lack faith and confidence in doing things, you are bound to fail, you are bound to make mistakes. Where there is a mental hindrance, it prevents you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness to act, to live life. So these five mental hindrance, if you are not mindful, not aware, you cannot overcome them. They become very severe habitual tendency. And every time you have a problem, you will cling on to that mental hindrance of restlessness, fear, worry, anxiety, even doubt. Then sensual desire, you will, of course, throughout the day, you exhibit them. That's why we call habitual. So if this is the way of living being or sentient being become heedless. They repeat all this almost throughout the day, all the time, until affliction arises. This is heedless living, without Dhamma, without understanding. So the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. He said, this mental hindrance, you have to reverse it. Otherwise, you will become heedless. Suffering or affliction will follow you. So how do we reverse this mental hindrance? He said, you have to cultivate the opposite five, which he called the mental faculties, spiritual faculty, mind state that can allow you to understand spiritual teachings. That's why this five spiritual faculties are very important. They are Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. The English translation is faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Virya is spiritual tenacity to go this way. Or through understanding, you know the importance of this teaching. You want to develop the spiritual zeal, like EAL, to cultivate this teaching. So virya is a type of energy that sees the importance of this cultivation, then go all out to cultivate it, to develop the spiritual tenacity or spiritual zeal to go this way. Then the third spiritual faculty is sati, mindfulness. That's why we learn to be mindful, to be aware, to be within the moment, the awareness nature. When you are aware without thought, you are being mindful. The mind is in full awareness, fullness, without thought. So once the arise, you become sensitive, you become aware, you can meditate. Then when you stabilize the, you become samadhi, collected and unwavering. Then with the samadhi, you can see things as they are and awaken. You can observe with clarity. Then the Dhamma unfolds itself and wisdom arises, the last spiritual faculty. So these five, if you cultivate them, it will root out the five mental hindrances. Whereas these opposite five, when they arise, the five mental hindrances cease to be. They are complementary, but cancel each other. It's a pair. Where hindrances are there, means you lack spiritual faculties. Where spiritual faculties are there, mental hindrances cease. Then you become heedful, aware. You are no longer in a problematic, heedless state of delusion. Because when the spiritual faculty is there, the mental hindrance is gone, then there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. Then what happened to your mind? Your mind will have the spiritual faculty of sadha that will make you very calm, very composed, full of faith. Then virya, you will not be sleepy. The spiritual tenacity and zeal will make you alert, motivate you to go all out, to cultivate. Then when there is a tea, you cannot think the wrong thought. You cannot be heedless. You are just aware. And the mind that is aware can meditate. Then everything ceases and returns. Then you develop the wisdom. Similarly with samadhi, you will not stir your mind. You will not create the sensual desire and ill will. You will not be sleepy because of the virya. Then you cannot be restless because you are in sati. You don't go and think the wrong thought. You don't have wrong view. Then finally, when there is panya, all this becomes beautiful. So you are in a meditative state with inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness of sati and samadhi anchored by wisdom. And that is an enlightened mind, a meditative mind, a mind that is heedful, totally aware and mindful. So this part the book never teach you. So I add in, do listen to this part on the five mental hindrances that lead to this habitual tendency. That's why all cultivation is to develop wisdom to root out habitual tendency. And how habitual tendency come about, all has been clearly explained. So listen to this section. It will help you in your cultivation. We often say that engaging in spiritual practice is learning to eliminate habitual tendency. So this is the reason why I explain habitual tendency, linking it to the five mental hindrances. Then how through the understanding of the Buddha's teaching, we introduce the opposite five spiritual faculty to help practitioner or cultivator to overcome the five mental hindrances. Then it is mentioned ordinary people have severe habitual tendency, which is very true. If you are just an ordinary Puttajana, not enlightened yet, your habitual tendency is very strong. I already explained just now. So whether they are habits of speech or action, all such habitual tendency must be eliminated one by one. So it's not easy. That's why cultivation is not easy. You have to be mindful, to be aware, and you have to understand how this habitual tendency comes about. Why do we react and stir our mind habitually throughout the day? Before we have the Dhamma understanding, before we can actually do something about it, so that we will not be the same old heedless, deluded sentient beings, so that we can be mindful, aware, more kind, more virtuous, more sensitive and wise, then we will not have the mental hindrance. The mental hindrance are there because we lack this spiritual faculty, we lack this understanding. That's why we immediately stir our mind and create fear, worry, anxiety, or sensual desire, ill will. That is not life. To me, that is heedless living. That is suffering. That is affliction. So in order to truly live life, you have to understand all this through mindfulness, through awareness, through understanding, reflect, contemplate until very, very clear. Then determine not to do that anymore. Then determine to develop the wisdom, the right view, to retrospectively root out all this. If we can follow the Buddha's advice to see things as they are, to accept the reality of the moment, the world is the world, people are just the way they are, then we can be at peace with all conditions, all situations. Then we can accord and flow with condition. This is Dhamma. When you have this, you are at peace. Your mind will not stir, will not react, will not create habitual tendency, which means wisdom liberate and free your mind and make you beautiful, heedful. Then with clarity, you can act, you can live, you can move. Everything becomes so different, so wonderful. Okay, I read on and see what the commentary has to say. That part that I just shared with you is not in the book. They didn't explain this because maybe they don't have that understanding yet. Okay, the last paragraph. Not only should we eliminate the habitual tendency we manifest throughout our outward action, we must also eliminate the delusion and ignorance in our mind so that we can develop flawless wisdom. So this is very true. This is going one step further. Once you can eliminate or root out habitual tendency, means you have the wisdom ready. Then you can actually slowly root out self-delusion, sakkāya-ditthi, followed by finally completely root out ignorance, avijja. Then you will come to know, think also like that, don't think also like that. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara cease to be. You don't create sankhara unnecessarily anymore. With each delusion we eliminate, we will grow in wisdom. By persevering, we can advance in cultivating the virtue of wisdom. So this can become a reality. You have to persevere. We must not give up because of failure. We should continue to dedicate ourselves to advancing our spiritual practice and developing the virtue of wisdom in order to truly attain a flawless state and develop great wisdom. The virtue of wisdom must be cultivated internally before it can be manifested externally to earn people's affirmation, trust, and respect. This is very true. This virtue of wisdom or wisdom, you have to cultivate internally until it becomes a part of you, until you yourself have that wisdom and you can overcome your affliction, your suffering, your misery, your delusion. When you can root them out all, means you have cultivated them internally within your own mind field. Then only you can apply outside, means it can be manifested externally to help people. Because if you cannot do that, then you cannot earn people's trust, respect, and affirmation. So this is where the practical aspect of cultivation come in. that you yourself has not developed the wisdom and the awakening to deal with your own problem in life, or solve your own delusion, root out your own delusion, self-delusion and avidya. Then how can you help people? How can you do the work of the bodhisattva? So all these are very clear. So the next heading is on the eight merit. So this one, I hope you all can go back and read it out. The eight merits is inconceivable. With it, we can establish various skill or skillful means to enable others to form aspiration. Once their faith has developed, we lead them to courageously advance. With mind unwavering, we lead them to strengthen their aspiration. If someone previously do not believe in the existence of transgressions or blessing, we must practice the sutta's teaching to inspire their faith. We will fortify our observance of precept and our patience, as we also practice the parameters of giving. We will attain unsurpassed bodhi and purity. And purify all Buddha lands. So this one you go back and read. Okay, now we will open up for meditation reporting.
Okay, I will continue with my sharing.
Yeah.
Okay, just to comment on today's teaching, Brother. Especially the sentence itself that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
To eliminate habitual tendencies is to eliminate karmic negativity.
Yeah, yeah.
That to me is so important, Brother.
Yeah, very powerful and
very powerful. Yeah.
Very deep meaning type of statement. Mm.
Yes. Because that is what we have to work towards
in our cultivation. Yes,
definitely, Brother. If we are not able to do this,
you cannot progress. Because the habitual tendency keep on coming back, haunt you.
And this goes on and on. It's like the cycle of suffering will be there.
Right. Yes. It's like the what they call poverty cycle. This one is affliction cycle.
Yeah.
It will continue to actually move you, torment you, and make you miserable until you wake up. Because these are habitual tendency born of delusion, born of heedless thinking, heedless way of living life. Because you don't develop the spiritual faculty. And you do all this so often until it becomes habits. Then it becomes a tendency. That's why it becomes habitual tendency. Very difficult to root out. And living beings don't know what to do with it. And even cultivators don't understand this. That's why they go and practice something else. To them, they thought vipassana. Then they thought jhana, jnana, all those things. But the basic teaching has not been understood. The habitual tendencies are the one that condition them into heedless thinking, negativity, affliction, suffering, and misery. So from there, you cannot see all these means you don't have the Dhamma understanding. You have not cultivated it correctly. Then all those things that they do actually, to me, sad to say, sometimes you don't know how to do it properly, it's a waste of time. Most of it are thought-based meditation that are based on knowledge, that are based on words, methods, technique, logic, and all those things. But the real training is not there, because you need mindfulness to see all this. You need sati, stability of sati, leading to samadhi, to see all this and understand all this. And you can appreciate and grasp the meaning very fast because for you, PJ, sadhu to you, you have the understanding and you have the training and you have done it before. That's why you see all this very clearly. The moment I share, you already grasp it. which is very good. Mm. Yeah, you can continue, PJ. Yeah.
Yeah, Brother, because actually what I plan to share today was actually in relation to all this.
Wow, very good.
So when I heard your sharing, I was going, oh, okay.
Yeah, but no wonder you straight away can grasp it and understand it.
Yeah, because, you know, like earlier on Tuesday when I was sharing about what I've gone through this past few weeks.
Ah, yes.
It really shows me what the mind is capable of. The mind can delude you into a lot of things.
Correct.
It can make you very miserable. And that's why I was thinking about the contemplation of the law of dependent origination.
Is very good. Yeah. Mm.
So when you were talking about today's sharing, I was thinking, oh, very closely related to what?
Very closely related, yes.
Yeah.
All these are paticca-samuppanna.
Ah, yes.
Law of dependent origination. Yes. Because of ignorance, created heedless thinking.
Yes.
Avijja paticca-sankara. That sankara, because of avijja, is deluded thinking, heedless thinking. Then heedless thinking condition heedless consciousness. That's why sankara paccaya viññānaṁ. Then viññānaṁ, you input the wrong content of consciousness, you will condition nama rūpa, wrong thought. And the whole mess of suffering start. That's why paticca samuppada very clearly seen. Then you wake up, then you realize without right view, everything you do is wrong. Without right view, there is no way to cultivate noble eightfold path. That's why noble eightfold path start with right view, right understanding. And that makes the Dhamma so beautiful. So you are right, PJ. Yeah? Sadhu Teo.
And also, Bertil, the aspiration of the Bodhisattva vows.
Oh, very important.
Oh, this one, especially the aspiration, you see, like when we say we to have the understanding and right view, okay? The three view, three right views, one of it is law of dependent origination. Chitanyama. So this is something that I have been wanting to understand clearly, brother.
Wow, Sadhu, very good.
I find that is the basis of I think the Buddha's teaching. If you can understand the mind, I think that solves a lot of whatever
human problem, human affliction. Human suffering and affliction. Yes, true.
Then like the second phrase of the aspiration is to understand the two aspects of the form and mind clearly. Whenever I chant this, and I always tell myself, wow, this is what I have to understand.
Yes.
If I don't understand this, then I will go on suffering.
Yeah, self-delusion will be there. You will attach, you will think, you will grasp. The two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind is very important. When you understand that, you know it's just a vehicle and a tool for you to come to this universe, to live life, to experience life. So make use of it. So use it for the good of the many, to cultivate, to do your duty, to fulfill your vow, to do whatever you want as a cultivator or bodhisattva. So all this will fall into play. That's why for you, PG, Sadhu to you, all these are becoming clearer and clearer and clearer, because when you really put it into practice, do the vow sincerely, then as you cultivate, all these surface become clear. Then you can connect the teaching together. Right now, it become very clear. Everything you chant from the yellow card, the four pages of the Bodhisattva vow and aspiration, they become like clear to you, and you can link them. Even the five degrees of form and mind, the two aspects, it becomes so beautiful now. Because this teaching to be fair to the Buddhist community, you look all over. Yeah. Even after I have shared all this, before I share, can you find anywhere the way is been taught, the two aspects? No. They only know the five aggregate as rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, miyana, and there is no emphasis, explanation, or teaching on it. They don't even know that the second aspect is the thought process, how they input the content of consciousness from the memory, views, opinion, condition. Nobody knows. And they don't even know what that teaching is. Then the first aspect as a human being, of course, that one some people might know, but they cannot link it to karma, the first right view, law of karma. Because that form and mind is impermanent, lead to suffering when you attach and cling. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling onto, hold onto, and grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. That's how self-delusion, sakyadity, can be rooted out. That's why the anatta nature, the non-self nature, no mark of a self cultivating, no mark of others, no mark of them. So all this become clear. Then when it become clear, only you can understand that this form and mind is subject to karma. That's why the form and mind, which is connected to our nature, has a duty in this universe or in this conditioned world. When you understand all this, you will know how to cultivate accordingly. That's why the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. Salutation to the Sangha. The four beautiful, what they call embodiment of a enlightened disciple of the Buddha. The Buddha always chants Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. So this one is of good conduct, of upright conduct, of wise conduct, and of dutiful conduct. So they have these four very beautiful conduct that distinguish them from ordinary Buddhajana. The enlightened being will know these four conduct as very important. So all this understanding, they tie up with the Bodhisattva vow, the teaching, and all of the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us. That's why now you are starting to have the understanding to link, which is very beautiful. So Sadhu, please, you continue with your sharing. Yeah,
Bertil, because that itself will also connect to the Four Noble Truths.
Yes. Turning everything.
The three turning, especially the second turning.
Yeah, second turning. Yeah.
Let's just say the first noble truth.
Yeah.
This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood.
Yes.
So as we understand the workings of the mind,
yes,
and how our habitual tendencies
create
so much problem for us.
Yes.
So when we can see this, I think then we will understand what dukkha is.
Yes, okay. Then you will wake up.
Yes.
No wonder your mind doesn't move when your sister passed away, that news. And when you drive back also, it becomes different already. But the understanding is there, the two aspects of form and mind, no reality, no mind, everything is clear. Otherwise, that one will have problem. That one will arise, the emotion and all those things. And sometimes the remorse, the regret. So all this, when you have the correct training and the correct cultivation, you can see the difference. That form and mind is being transformed. It cannot go back to the old way, the heedless way. We got no more of those delusion, the heedless thinking, the attachment, the clinging, all cannot surface anymore. We have the yoniso manasikara, the dhamma, which prevents delusion. They will keep on surfacing. Then this understanding free and liberate the cultivator's mind, which in your case is your mind. That's why you can understand all this and you can see all this, which is most beautiful, subtle to you, is it? Very good. Continue. Yeah,
Brother, another thing is like let me just quote an example of it. It's like on the seventh day itself when we went to collect the ashes because the reality of seeing the bones and the ashes,
sadhu.
That itself will if we don't have the acceptance, right? Acceptance itself, if attached to all things like
because that visual consciousness can trigger off memory. Then from the memory, it can create all the emotion, everything. Without Dhamma, without wisdom, that paticca samuppada cycle will go, it will move. But because of the wisdom and the understanding, you can even accept the reality. And then you can just perceive it with clarity. The physical body, when it's devoid of consciousness, go the way of nature, because it consists of the four elements. And this element will disperse. Then what you have is the ashes. And of course, human being being emotional, being superstitious, they think this is what that being is. Then of course they want to like put it in an urn and all. You can do that for lay people, for puttajana. But for the enlightened being, they know all this has got no meaning, because there is no reality. But it doesn't mean that it cannot be done if it can be done for wholesomeness, to let people have the faith and all those things, like your niece or your sister's sibling and all the their children and all those things. No problem, because this is Dhamma for them to hold on to, so that they can at least develop some form of good mind state, feel a piety mind state or whatever. But if it's something that turn them into emotion that trigger of sadness, affliction, then you have to explain to them. The Dhamma can actually help you overcome all this. Because a lot of people, especially the Buddhajana, the deluded living being who has not had the Dhamma, they cannot take all this. To them, it can be afflicting. Affliction can arise anytime. Sometimes when they hear the chanting, they also become sad. And when they go and collect the ash, they also become sad. And in between, they suffer. They become miserable. Then remorse and all that. But this is the way of living beings. And when the mind understands for cultivator, it becomes very clear, very beautiful. So all this understanding you will have. That's why you can actually go through that process. Then you can reflect on it, contemplate, and you can see how different is it now. No longer like last time with the superstition and all those things. Or the ashes are. Maybe the consciousness is still there. Maybe this one is my sister, my one. No more. Because that form and mind, even before it's separate, it's just a condition arising phenomenon, no reality. That's a no mind, no entity within. But there is such thing as life, relationship. There is such thing as thought process, memory and all those things. That pertain to the condition world. The condition world has duality, has Dhamma, has all this. So all this understanding, later on when your wisdom stabilized, will surface. Then it is so beautiful. You can grasp it, understand it, reflect on it, contemplate on it, and it turned out to be so beautiful. And this is what the real Dhamma is. When you have the real Dhamma, you transform, you become different. Oh, very good. So you can continue. After the ash, what happened?
After the ash, actually is not much left, because after that, we have to they put it into urn, then later we have to send it to Nirvana.
Yes, they bought a place there.
It's actually very near to the Kaloxi Temple. Luckily my sister had the good planning to already got a place there, so we don't have to rush.
Save you a lot of hassle.
So similarly, Bratio, let me share an incident that saw at the cremation area when we collected the ash. There was a family, I think it's quite a young family, that also came. That one came for cremation. Ours was to collect the ashes. When the casket was pushed in and about to be pushed in into the cremate. That is the first time I've seen, especially a Chinese family, cry so much. But it was heartbreaking. I asked myself, I told myself, this is what happens to human beings when we have so much attachment. There's nothing bad, nothing wrong with you, nothing wrong with it, because
these are very natural behavior.
Conditioned world.
Conditioned world.
This is a conditioned world where we have strong relationships, especially in families. So this tends to happen, especially with somebody like a sudden death, you know. I suspected that the person in the casket is the mother. Can you just imagine, what happens to the family? All these subsequent happenings, that's why it triggers me to contemplate on the law of dependent origination. Yes.
That one is very powerful. Then you can understand clearly that the world is different. Human beings are different depending on the delusion level and the understanding. They behave differently. Then you will continue to witness a lot more. As a bodhisattva, this exposure of life is going to be very beautiful, very, very beautiful. So all this is what you will go through, which is something that will expand your horizon of understanding. Very good. Sadhu to you, Fiji.
And even when we go to Nirvana, we can see, I saw that, you know, even in death, we have so many rules to follow, and it's like it's so strict that you must do this and do this. Nobody dares to break any of this. How to say, even in death we want everything to be, I want a perfect view when my urn is placed. You know, after I go and view it, and I don't say, this is nice place and all that. Then only I tell myself, you see, even in death, you are so fussy.
Because this is what the Buddha meant by belief in rites and ritual, superstition. Because people just, because of ignorant delusion, they don't understand, they can become gullible. That's why sometimes people can make money out of them, is because of that. And they will tell them, this feng shui not so nice, you must do a feng shui, a better one, a more expensive one. Then they will recommend you a lot of things. Then you must do this ceremony. Actually, no meaning. If you don't take care of karma, all this, you are actually deluding yourself. Maybe it may give you a form of comfort at that moment. But this is delusion, really heedless delusion. So when you understand already, all this is within the conditioned world. The Dhamma that the cultivator understands is different. He know you, he know me. Form and mind separate, that's it, finish. The Dhamma part is gone. Wait, let me answer the question. Yes, PJ, sorry. So I was trying to explain. All this is pertaining to the world. When they don't understand, they will go through all this. That's why right and ritual, superstition, and all this thing is one of the 10 factors that bind living beings in the world. So even as a Sotapan, the first stage of sainthood, the first 3 factors will be severe. First is Sakkayaditti, self-delusion, no more. Then the second one is belief in rites and rituals, superstition, no more. So all these factors will be gone. Then there is no more doubt on the 3rd factors about the Triple Gem, about the teaching, about the truth and the reality. So this first 3 factor is very powerful. Once you sever a lot of heedless way of affliction is gone. But of course, the 4th and the 5th factors is sensual desire, ill will, and that one can still afflict what they call the sotapan. But once they cultivate, continue to cultivate, and able to attenuate it, then they become Sakkadagami. So Sakkadagami is first 3 factor gone, then 4th and 5th factor attenuated, means reduced. But when you reach Anagami, the 4th and 5th, which is sensual desire, it will completely rooted out, no more. So the first 5 factors completely severe. Then the next 5, that one, you need to be Arahan to really root it out. So even the Anagami, they still attach to the 6 and 7. The 6 and 7 is attachment to form jhana and formless jhana. Then the 8 factors is mana. Mana is the subtle self-conceit, the subtle ego. Then the 9 factors, you will be surprised. That one, they call it restlessness of mind. So that restlessness is not really like the mental hindrance, because for the Anagami to go through the enlightenment, very likely he has rooted that out. But this one is for no reason at certain time, because the avijja is still there, this Anagami, his mind can become restless. Because he just don't understand why suddenly the mind become like that. So restlessness can arise. Then finally, the last factor is avijja. And once that one rooted out, you will realize the complete cessation, nibbana. That's why after that, no more ignorance, no more rebirth consciousness. The arahant that passed away is no longer reborn in the delusion way. The way of sentient being or Buddhijana. So they will cease. But if they have the Bodhisattva vow, if they know how to go the Bodhisattva way, then they can come back again in another form of mind through pure mind. Pure mind that is conditioned by the first vow. Yes, they vow to liberate sentient being, the limitless sentient being throughout the universe. And this one is out of love and compassion. That's why they do that. So that vow will create causes and conditions for another form of mind to arise. But that is based on a pure thought, no avijja. Means a virtuous thought that arises. No more ignorance. And that one can also condition form of mind to come back. That's how Bodhisattva come back. They can take rebirth, then they can continue to do their work because of their vows, their atitan, their aspiration. So all this, as you walk this way, you will come to understand. Okay, is it? So
yeah,
this is an added explanation for people who have the condition to understand. So very good. So after that, you saw the family going to the cremation. Then you saw how they cry and all those things. Yeah, so very good.
Radio, you see, like the basis of, to me, the basis of law of dependent origination is when we always say, when condition no more.
Very good. Everything ceases to be.
So this is the basis of the law of dependent.
This
is something that I told myself I must understand clearly.
Yes, so that it will not create problem for you in future. Because condition no more, everything ceases.
That's why we say impermanence.
The characteristic
is impermanence itself.
Yes.
Dukkha is so clear.
Yes, very clear. When you wanting your way, which is not nature's way, following the law of dependent origination, you will suffer. You will attach, you will cling, you will ground, and you will create your own affliction. That's why you will see it very clearly. Your nature's law is such. When conditioned like that, things will be like that. You have to accept that reality. If you cannot accept, you resist, you create affliction, suffering, misery. Very good. That's why you can link them all out. But it's just some of the,
And this in turn will tie up with the second turning of the second noble truth. Attachment and craving is
to be abundant.
This is what it's about, right, Rachel?
Yes. If you don't severe it or root it out to an understanding of Noma, then it will continue to afflict the human being. They can go and use their knowledge, their thought to rationalize, to like think about it. That's why I say all the way of the mundane thinking, they will use it to analyze a situation. So no amount of analysis or thinking can actually bring about wisdom or freedom. But the more you analyze, the more entangled you become, because all these are based on your individual views, opinion, and conditioning. Belief system. But the reality is, hey, no you, hey, no me, no mark. Then you still got an individual who still have a relationship and the thought, which is egoic, want to analyze what to do from now on. How come like that? So they will come out with other type of belief system to maybe at least themselves, you know. So you will start to see all this happening in the world. That's why the Buddha said there is a lot of wrong view, sakkayaditti. The wrong view is so thick. So it's not easy, because what he realized, the paticca-samuppada law dependent origination, through insight into the universal characteristic, is so penetrative. And it points towards no mark, non-self, empty nature of existence. And this is a very deep-rooted understanding of life. Without this, you cannot free. That's why people are caught in the thought process. They use thought to analyze things, to understand things, then to come up with solution and answer to things. Cannot. Thought doesn't give rise to wisdom. Wisdom need to be awakened to, insight into. That's why it's completely different. It's an understanding. It's not a knowledge. It's not how to do. It's understanding things the way it is, as it is. Understanding truth, the reality within the moment and all those things. So as you go through all this, as you experience all this, you are more and more exposed into all of life. Then as you move this Bodhisattva way cultivation more and more, more and more, in future you will develop more and more of all this beautiful understanding. Like this line, you again come across another understanding which is very important, the Paticca Samuppanna, the law of dependent origination. When condition arise, thing arise. When condition continue to sustain itself, thing continue to flow and exist. But when condition cease to be, everything cease. Nothing to talk about. That's why cessation. Cessation means everything cease. We are, it's a condition world. When condition cease to be, everything cease. Like the Diamond Sutra. Each year you wave on, Zhu Mong Huan Tao Ni, Zhu Lu Yi Lu Tian, Ying Zuo Lu Si Guan. So the English translation is, everything within the conditioned world is dependent originating, condition arising phenomenon, you wave on. And because it is condition arising causal phenomenon, there is no reality. That's why everything is like a dream, dreamlike, illusionary. Then like a bubble, pop, gone, pop, gone. Then like a shadow, no reality. You see the shadow following you everywhere, but it's just a shadow, no reality. Then Zhu Lu Yi Lu Tian is like a lightning, a morning dew, and a lightning flash. So phenomena is short. Very short. Morning dew, when the sunlight arises, when the heat is there, the dew is gone. Then lightning flash are for things that happen very fast, like our thought process, our feeling, our consciousness. They come and they go, they come and they go very fast. Our breathing, our footstep, our form and mind. Appearing, disappearing, very fast, very clear. So you will see all this very clearly. Then you realize the phenomenal world is not what you think, not what the living being think. There is no reality. Everything is just the way it is, through suchness, the Dhamma of suchness, the suchness of all things, such, 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 ta, ta, ta. So all this, the cultivator will come to fathom, comprehend. Then they will have that joy, that understanding. Then they will move and they become very different. That's why bodhisattvas are very different. Cultivator of the way who has this understanding are very different. And they can really teach very profound Dhamma. Sadhu to you, huh? Is it good? You are going through all this, which is very beautiful.
Brother, from what I see, yes. It is actually our belief, our conditions that made us so deluded that we can't see that all this is actually delusions itself.
Yeah.
We grab so tight to our beliefs and our conditions.
Yes.
We take it that it is like the truth itself, like, you know?
Yeah, like I always
we
say.
We cannot accept that all these phenomena and sense experience actually arise because of condition. We cannot accept that.
Yeah. All these are due to delusion, sakkayaditti, self-delusion. When there is no self, no personality, there is no greed, no hatred. And when there is no greed, no hatred, there is no delusion. That's why the egoic mind, which is sakkayaditti, self-delusion, that we grasp onto the five aggregate of form and mind, thinking it's real, thinking that we exist. This is what we are. And because of that, the personality, the egoic mind arrives. Then what happened? This one, it has craving, it has desire for me or not for me. That's why that selfishness, that greed will surface. Then when things don't go your way, when things arise that they don't like, they want to push away. So the evil roots of greed and hatred keep on oscillating, and that comes from what? Self-delusion, sacrality, where you think you believe. That's why you want to cling drops, and you think this is me, this is I, all this can be mine. So because of that, the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. Sakaiditi, self-delusion, created suffering, affliction. So like you mentioned just now, for a living being to understand this is very difficult. Where they believe it's very real, the form and mind is very real, where there is so much emotion attached to it. And the senses that see all this, perceive all this, is like so real to you. Everything is very tangible, like the physical world, everything you touch, you feel, then there can be emotion. How can you say all this is empty and unreal unless you have the Dhamma? So now you understand, huh, Fiji?
Yeah, Virgil, now I'm starting to understand the Dhamma better.
In a very profound manner.
I find it so meaningful, Virgil.
Yeah, so beautiful. No longer at the superficial level of last time, knowledge. Now you penetrated the truth. Then you realize human beings, how can they ever understand? Like I used to share last night, what I realized is the complete opposite of what normal human beings believe is real and true. They take the unreal as real. They take impermanent as permanent. They don't believe that there is old age, sickness and death because they want to cling on to the form forever young. And when they grow old, they cannot accept. All this reflect the lack of understanding, lack of Dhamma. Yeah. But the reality is the form and mind is not me. It goes the way of nature. So why grasp, why cling, why hold? That's why when you understand this through the five daily contemplation, we can free our mind to a certain extent. That's why for the initial contemplative wisdom, the five, daily contemplation is very good. The Buddha said, this body of mine is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. Then all this that I think is me, is mine, or exists, they were separate because they are dependent originating. When condition arise, they arise, they exist like real. Sometimes you may think it belongs to you. But if you yourself, your form and mind is unreal, how can you bring along anything? Because that one, form and mind one separate, it ceases to be. Then who own anything? There is no ownership, nothing. That's why it's empty. That's why lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Su zu he pi, pu ku, wei kong, liu ling. So all this expression of Dhamma become very meaningful, very beautiful. Okay, Sadhu, anything else?
Yeah, Bratio, since you mentioned about this sentence that you always like to say, come empty.
When you are born into this world, you come empty. And when you pass away, you also pass away empty. You can't bring along anything. Then why do living beings through ignorance grieve in between over emptiness? So that one is very beautiful.
Yeah, brother, you see, when now that we have to clear my sister's things, you know?
Yes.
Wow, you know, the things that human beings keep.
Accumulate.
Then today I read a short video somebody sent into one of our chat groups, you know. It's called I think this is a subject that I think we as calamitas should take the trouble to understand. It's called death death clearing, clear clear,
okay.
So apparently this some This is something that is practiced by, I think, the Swiss. Okay.
Oh,
So,
okay.
like, sorry to say, we
Yeah,
are
yeah.
of this age. I think we should really start to think about it
Yeah.
because our homes and all this, we have so much things.
Yes, yes,
Especially
yes.
me, I feel my whole house.
Yeah,
Okay.
yeah, yeah.
And you see, we do not think that when we pass away, if we leave inheritance to our beneficiaries, of course they will be
Yes.
so happy.
Yeah,
But if
yeah,
you
yeah.
leave a whole house load of rubbish in your house,
Yeah,
which to
that will
them
be
is
a problem.
not of
Yeah.
much value,
Yeah.
that is a problem to them.
Yes, yes,
So
yes.
I think this so-called process of death clearing is
Yeah.
very beneficial to all parties.
Yes,
As we
yes.
start to let go of things, you know,
Yeah.
that we don't keep so much, I think that when we pass away,
Yeah,
both
yeah.
parties will be happy. We don't
Yes, yes,
attach to our anymore gratitude. And
yeah,
in
yeah,
the
yeah.
process,
Very true.
in the
In fact, we
process,
have to learn to clear things. But things that are no longer useful, beneficial, just clear it. There is one Kayamita, I remember, I think Lee Hoon. She got a very good concept. Things that you keep and never look at for more than 6 months, just throw, is it? But of course, not your jewelry and your money. Huh? Sometimes you forgot. But things that she meant is like all those things that you tend to keep and store, but for more than 6 months, you never look at it. The chances is you will never look at it unless there is some sentimental value or meaning. Otherwise, clear it so that it's less problematic for the younger generation. And later on, when they have to clear all this, like you say, death clearing, which is very true. And a lot of the things that old people use, the younger people, they don't want because it's not suitable anymore. So all
I
this.
Feel, I think this in this way is also a process for us to accept that death is inevitable.
Yes, it's
So,
a reality. Yeah, separation of form and mind. Yes.
The acceptance of death so that there is less fear.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good way to prepare us lah.
Yeah, yeah. It's good for the society, for the world. Because this understanding must be developed further. Otherwise, it can create unnecessary problem for the younger generation. I remember there is also another Kayamita, if I'm not wrong, is quite an elderly one, a couple. Yeah, the son is a Christian, so she doesn't want to burden the son with all the things that she has collected, because she is a Buddhist. And she actually, because of the Dhamma, helped her a lot and helped overcome many things. But when she reached almost 80 or what, she also don't want to trouble the children. That's why the image that I gave to her, the Kuan Yin, oh sorry, the Buddha, the Mahayana Buddha that I bought from China, she asked me very politely, is it better you don't mind? I returned to you. I said, good, no problem. Then she returned to me. That was many years ago. And it's still in my house. And anybody wants it, you can still have
Radio, that one you gave to me already.
No, no, there's another one. I gave to you one is another one. That one I bought from China too.
Ah,
but
okay.
This one is another, this one Mahayana one. Yours one is a Kuan Yin, isn't it?
No, the Buddha Rupa, the brass
also.
One, the brass
oh, okay.
Buddha Rupa.
Oh, okay. Oh, the brass one. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah. But this one is bronze. This one is very serene. Is it yours? Ah?
Yes, the
you
small.
You left it in my house. Ah?
The one in front of the Amitabha.
Amitabha. Ah, Miss is yours. Oh, I forgot I have given to you. Yeah, sadhu. Ah, Father. Oh, that one is a very good one. You better have it. That one.
Yeah, Brother, definitely, definitely.
Father.
I appreciate that very much, Brother.
You collect it when you are free. That one many years already. Is very good. Yeah. Oh, luckily you remind me. I thought nobody has taken it. So for me, when there's condition, I just give it away. Oh, very good. So now at least you reminded me. Very good, PJ Sadhu. Oh, no wonder you have such great affinity. Very good, Sadhu.
You know, Bratio, when we talk about the Buddha Rupang, that triggered off another memory. You know, when I went to Nepal, and I went to this, what they call the heritage area, I cannot remember, Patan Square. And that area, they have a lot of those shops and all this. And I went in there. Rapio, surprisingly, I bought a picture of a Buddha.
Wow,
Rapio, that time I have nothing to do with anything religion or spiritual. I do not know why I buy that.
Yeah.
And when I moved into my apartment, that is one of the paint. I had it framed and I put it up. I
don't
understand why I do that, Rapio.
Yeah.
And also, I had two pictures. I bought two pictures of the lotus. And this is the three photos that I framed. And I put it up.
Sadhu.
Yeah, Rachel, like you say,
you
it's
have
probably
affinity.
In the past. Yes, it's in
you
the
have
past.
From
have
your past. Yes.
Even without knowing, we still do things.
You
were
still blind. You were still blind. And it will come to you. Like all the images. Almost all that is in my house, it come by itself. I never go and look for them. Things happen in a very strange manner. Sadhu, very good. Now you start to see all this. Oh, no wonder all this condition already show the sign that you have the affinity in the Dhamma. No wonder when the time comes, you move so fast. Sadhu, Vijay, very good.
this was so many years ago. It's
yes,
about like
many, many 15, years ago. Yes.
15 years ago. Years ago when I was had nothing to do with religion.
Yes. That time you don't believe anything. Sadhu.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. So,
I really accept, Brother. Causes and conditions are there for me to see, so I better accept it.
That's why when you reflect back, you will come to know that the Dhamma is so beautiful. Everything happened because of a reason, a cause behind. And when they unfold, they become very beautiful, especially when you connect. Then you look back, everything become very clear. That's why I look back at my life. After 1989, I realized, it's not definitely not a coincidence. It's all meant to be. In fact, when I was young, I can feel, I can sense that my nature is different. I am different. My life is different. And a lot of things happened when I was young to show me, to let me understand. And when I grew up, everything just fall into place. Then when the time come, the teacher come, the guide come, then I move and I cultivate, then I connect, then I recall everything. That's why all these are very beautiful.
I think with this I will end my sharing.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Do